My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the trembling in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Thanks so much for being here. Hour number two. If you missed any parts of hour number one, my goodness, be sure and check it out. We talked quite a bit about, well, we talked entirely about CGR Wellness and about your health. And we encourage you to check out the things that we were talking about, in particular about immune health, because they're talking about another wave of this ridiculousness and forced vaccines and so on and so on and so on. And the way you prevent all of that from impacting you, well, it's really simple. You take care of yourself, and there are natural ways in which you can do that. and we introduce those to you at CGRWellness.com. Well, I'm very excited to welcome my next guest back to the program. She is with the Southeastern Legal Foundation, one of the organizations that I've been associated with really since the early days of the program, almost 10 years now. I can't even hardly believe it. Todd Young used to come on the program a lot. And now CC has taken Todd's place, and it's exciting to get her back in the program. I hate that we have to have the conversations that we're going to have today, And now I don't know if you if we want to get into this or not, but if you saw the Alito's decision to take off the restriction, so the Biden administration now can go ahead and collude with social media platforms on free speech. I guess they're waiting for that Missouri case to go through. My attorney and I were talking about that yesterday, and I understand, but it's like, okay, in light of where we are and all of the stuff that's going on, and the White House basically sending out memos to media outlets saying, this is what you can talk about, you know, and this is what you can't say. And oh, by the way, we do control the FCC. Just thought we'd mention that. I mean, that's the underlying threat that is there. Anyway, sorry, didn't mean to bogart, but hey, CC, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I mean, that. Obviously, we're here today to talk specifically about free speech on college campuses, but then on a broader spectrum, we can maybe get to that at some point in the next 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's no secret that free speech is under attack in all forums, in all venues. And so it's definitely concerning. But yeah, like you said, college campuses are kind of ground zero for these experiments with free speech, and where the government is really trying to experiment with silencing people. And so if we don't protect free speech on our college campuses, you can forget about it everywhere else, right? So these are
called bias response. I mean, folks, this is the name. They're called bias response. It sounds like Ghostbusters to me.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is happening on college campuses across the country. They have all been implementing what are called bias reporting systems and bias response teams. And the way this works is colleges will encourage students to report each other anytime they think they see a quote unquote bias incident. What is a bias incident? Great question. Colleges don't really define it. And so students can report each other anytime they feel offended by the words they say, basically. And these reports go to campus administrators who are part of this bias response team. The bias response team then investigates the reports and can even discipline students simply for trying to exercise their First Amendment freedoms. So this is a major problem. Students have had enough. They are pushing back. We have sent several demand letters to colleges in the past few years. Lawsuits have been filed, and one lawsuit in particular that has been brought by Speech First on behalf of students at Virginia Tech has made its way up to the Supreme Court. And they are asking the court to review their petition to end the bias response team at Virginia Tech, and frankly, to end bias response teams across the country. So we are supporting them 100% of the way.
I mean, it would be as simple as me, when I introduced you, I said she has taken over for Todd Young, and you could say, I am not a cisgendered female. I'm non-binary, and now my name is blacklisted on, and I think this is the thing too. And I remember years ago having Michelle Owens on when we were talking about, because there are claims where young ladies are being assaulted, but there are also claims where we find out that's not the case at all. And through Title IX, it turned into this great big deal, but it would become a black mark on that young man's academic record that would travel with him. And it even if he left that school, it goes to the next one. I assume with these biased response teams that they can have these allegations placed in their permanent academic record that now travels with them no matter what campus they go to.
Exactly. And here's the thing. Those reports can be submitted completely anonymously. So students, there's nothing to stop students from falsely accusing one another of engaging in this quote unquote bias. You hurt my feelings.
Right.
And so there's not only this reputational harm that occurs, but there is no accountability for students who are falsely reporting other students. And in fact, we saw this happening to conservative students during the COVID years, a few years back when schools had all sorts of COVID guidelines and regulations on campus. The conservative students on those campuses were actually really trying to comply with those guidelines. They would wear their masks when they were required to wear them, but they would be outside handing out flyers, trying to gain awareness for their conservative causes.
Right.
And of course, students on that campus didn't like that. Mm-hmm. And so they falsely reported those conservative students to administrators to get their events shut down. We saw this time and time again with the COVID reporting stuff. And we are going to see this again with all of the bias reporting systems.
Well, really we watched it. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we watched it again. You know, there were a couple of situations in Virginia where you had people that were holding up signs that said, hey, you know, save this baby's life, right? You know, all lives matter, that those kinds of things. And I mean, you had people that literally were going up and grabbing their signs and trying to tear their signs off of their neck. And I mean, it was assault. And in one instance, if I remember correctly, one of them was actually an instructor, a teacher at the university was the one who was committing the assault, and the administration was like, well, you know, it's okay because we want to kill babies too, I guess.
Yeah, students and visiting speakers are literally risking their lives at this point just to try to engage in open dialogue. They want to have conversations, but as you said, a lot of their classmates just don't want to hear it, and in fact, heckle and even assault them to silence them. And unfortunately, administrators and our government are certainly not stepping in right now. So it's really up to the courts at this point to set some rules, some ground rules for colleges to follow, which is why this case up before the Supreme Court is so important right now.
Well, it's what is the purpose? We're going to talk a little bit later on with Ben Luna, who's running for Senate in New Mexico, about their governor's statement, basically saying that the Constitution is really kind of there, but it really doesn't mean anything. I have the power to overturn. I don't have to honor the oath that I took. It doesn't apply. I mean, this is the kind of mentality that we're talking about on college campuses, which is leading to these people thinking that there is no religious liberty, there's no First Amendment right, that the conservatives don't have a right to gather and peacefully redress their concerns, and God forbid that somebody should actually write an opinion piece in a college newspaper that doesn't follow this communist, Marxist, liberal ideology, they might go, you know, burn the place down.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling to see, you know, how much of our history and just civics that we've lost in our education. You see those interviews, like you said, you go to a college campus and ask students what the First Amendment says or who our first president was, and half the students don't even know, probably more than half the students don't know. So that's also why educating students is so important. And that's something that we try to do as well here at Southeastern Legal Foundation. We go to college campuses, we host webinars where we teach them about the First Amendment and what their rights are and how to stand up for themselves so that when those moments happen, when their administrators try to silence them or their classmates try to heckle them, they have some tools at their disposal that they can use so they can advocate for themselves.
You know, and to that point, Ken Mercer, a friend of mine who was on the Texas Board of Education for a number of years, sent me a message just recently about how now they are introducing in school books that those who want to make America great, well, we're all just the KKK. I mean, they're writing that into the history right now. that anybody that was, that is or has been active in trying to bring back the constitutional republic that our founders created is somehow a member of the KKK.
Yeah, it's so alarming. And I think people forget that K through 12 students also have First Amendment rights. They are entitled to have their own beliefs. And we've seen all over the news and we hear from parents all the time about children having to remove stickers from their backpacks or their laptops because they support a certain political candidate or a certain idea, and schools are trying to silence them left and right. And so the fact that it's coming up in textbooks now is especially alarming, because how do you stop that? Again, I think having the courts as a backstop for all of this is going to be especially important in the upcoming years, as this fight is only going to get worse.
I guess the question that I would have relative to that, and I've talked with David Shostokas is regularly on. He's actually representing one of the defendants in the Trump case, Reverend Stephen Lee. But we talked about the courts, and he has found in several, in Illinois and in Georgia, where the judges are basically creating law from the bench. There's no precedent. There isn't anything. They are literally creating laws and rules from the bench. How is Southeastern Legal Foundation addressing that? Are you guys, because you guys are a national organization, you've got cases in multiple states across the country dealing with this kind of issue, but issues like this, fighting back, pushing back on. I remember having a conversation years ago with Todd on the children that were going to file a lawsuit because they were blaming the government for the pollution in the air. I don't know if you're familiar with the case that I'm talking about. But how are you guys, what are you seeing as y'all are dealing with different courts and different judges across the country? How is the rule of law being applied?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's something that we have to deal with every day. There are different judges who have, you know, different views. And of course, judges are called on to be impartial, and they're meant to be arbiters of the Constitution, but they all have their own backgrounds. And so it's something that we are certainly fighting for. We are doing our best to get these important cases in front of not just one judge, but several judges, right? We are not just trying to go to one court and get one ruling. We're trying to go to several courts and get several rulings. And if the courts come out different ways, that creates what's called a circuit split.
Sure.
Which primes a case perfectly for the Supreme Court to address it. So, for example, this Speech First case with the bias response teams at Virginia Tech, they have brought several cases in several circuits across the country, circuit courts of appeal, and the circuit courts of appeal have come out in different ways. And so they are bringing this case to the Supreme Court, and it's something that we highlighted in our brief, saying, courts are coming out differently below. We need you, Supreme Court, to issue a ruling once and for all. And so that is something that all of the organizations in our legal movement are working towards, getting those cases up to the Supreme Court and creating prime opportunities for the Supreme Court to ultimately rule. So, you know, it's not ultimately down to one single judge,
sure.
Even if there are some rogue judges issuing rulings from the bench. The ultimate goal is to get it in front of several courts and ultimately the Supreme Court.
To that end, I'm glad you bring it to that place. You know, one of the things that we have had been hopeful of was that we would get, you know, with Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Amy, help me with her.
Tony Barrett.
Yeah. That with, you know, those three added in. Clarence Thomas has been a stalwart when it comes to constitutional originalism. Alito the same way for the most part. John Roberts has been a huge disappointment, but you just never know what he's going to do. But as it relates to that, as you guys look at, because you have to forecast, you take these cases, as you said, circuit court level. Now the strategy is let's get them to the Supreme Court. So that means we need to be watching what is the Supreme Court doing? How are they acting? How are they behaving? How are they grouping? There's 3-3-3. There's been a lot of conversation about the three conservatives, the three kind of in the middle, and the three way to the left. How do you guys see that playing out? What does the court look like to you?
You know, I am not a mind reader, so I can't.
I understand. Right. No, I'm just saying, as in general, they've been there long enough now. They've had what, three sessions together, I think, since they all got, you know, finally all got seated. What is the general consensus as you guys kick it around and look and say, okay, yeah, there, I need folks to understand when we talk about this, from my perspective, it's not about conservative or liberal. It's about what does the Constitution say? What are the precedents? How were these things addressed? How did Jay Johnson and the original courts look at these issues and render decisions? Because there's precedent going back 200 years. So to that, and we've had times when the court has appeared to go way off bounds from any form of precedent whatsoever. That was one of the things, substantive due process, that Clarence Thomas addressed when they changed the Roe v. Wade. To that point, I guess, is what I'm asking you is from a legal perspective, when you guys look at how are they ruling, are they coming more in line with the Constitution now than we've seen for the last 25 years? Where do we sit?
Yeah, I definitely think that as an organization, we're very hopeful. We've seen a lot of good rulings, you know, just this past summer and the summer before that, like you said, getting more and more in line with the Constitution and its original meaning and the text and history. You know, there's still a little ways to go, but I think it's always a good sign when politicians are scared, especially members of Congress, perhaps. I don't know if you saw, but yesterday, a few senators filed an amicus brief that was charged with all sorts of accusations against organizations like ours, where they were accusing us of, you know, trying to sway the Supreme Court to rule a certain way, and we're all political. Well, to an extent, amicus briefs are meant to sway the court one way or another. So they're right about that. But there is no dark money being traded between our groups. You know, we are all part of this cause because we care deeply about the Constitution. So all that to say, I think that we're right over the target when you have several notable senators, you know, writing these briefs to the Supreme Court saying that the court shouldn't trust our organizations and instead should listen to the senators who want to engage in court packing.
Well, and this is something that came up in my conversation on Wednesday with David, was the destructive tentacles of the 17th Amendment, which has essentially turned it all into a money game and a national money game. The Senate simply acts like a bunch of little presidents, because all the money that's coming in to them, it's not coming from their states in many instances. It's coming from outside sources who are then using those finances in order to sway and obtain votes. I mean, let's be honest. That's what's going on. And yes, I mean, I would expect the Southeastern Legal Foundation to file amicus briefs that remind the Supreme Court justices of what the Constitution says on a particular matter and on a particular issue. That's your charter. That's how you're established. That's what you would do. Logically, it would make sense. Now, if you've got a bunch of guys that are saying, no, we want to throw away the Constitution and we want to become a Marxist communist state, and we want, you know, the WEF and the WHO to run the United States of America, then they're going to have a problem with the things that you guys support. I thank you for what you're doing. I really do. And I encourage folks to go to slfliberty.org slfliberty.org. Get signed up for their emails. But if you're able, make a little contribution. $5, $10, $20, whatever you can do. Thousand is spelled T-H-O-U-S-A-N-D, and I'm sure CC and her organization would greatly appreciate a few of those as well. But seriously, they're fighting for our constitutional rights, and I appreciate that. Final thoughts, CC. You got a couple of minutes left.
Well, I appreciate you having me on as always. And I just, I always like to end on a message of hope. You know, we hear a lot of bad news all the time. But again, the Constitution was written to be a long lasting document to survive all sorts of political games. And so thankfully, we do have this judicial system that has vowed to uphold the Constitution as it was written, as it was intended originally. And we are doing our best, like you said, to hold all members of government to that oath, but especially our courts and other organizations out there are as well. So, we are doing our best, and we hope that people will stay involved and keep up on what all is going on at our court system.
And again, folks, warn your children about this biased police policy that's taking place on there, because I'm sure they're all, it's all across the country. So you need to warn your children about it as well, not to make them afraid to speak, but to make them aware of it. And if they have an issue that arises on their campus, slfliberty.org, reach out to them and let them know they are there to help support your children to experience their right to free speech, free practice of religion, freedom to redress their concerns, freedom to peacefully assemble, and a free press on their college campus. CC, thank you so much for all you're doing. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Remember, slfliberty.org. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. Perry Johnson is running as a candidate in the Republican race, the 2024 presidential race, and he has put out a PAC to support those and defend those that are saying, hey, there was a problem with the 2020 election. And yes, people have a right to their opinions with regards to that. And he's put $1 million of his own money into that PAC for these people's defense. That's called putting your money where your mouth is. Perry Johnson will be with us coming up. You're watching Chosen Generation Radio. I'm your host, Pastor Greg.
So up next, we have Clanslyte. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And Clanslyte is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you, and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Neither products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
Look, I am for marriage between a man and a woman. I am for life from conception. I am for following the Bible, and I believe that our founders started this nation on biblical principles. I am in support of our military and believe that America should play a role in world security. I believe our Constitution was intended for a moral people and that the Bible contains the only true moral code. I believe we are all born sinners and that God in His grace and mercy sent His Son Jesus Christ to die for our sins, and that if we will confess our sins, He is just and righteous to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. I believe salvation is not just accomplished in a little prayer, but that it is found in how that transformation is lived out. Jesus is to be the Lord of our lives, and we should follow biblical precepts. This is not legalism or works, but a life lived out in love and honor towards the one who died for my sins. Faith without works is dead and is no faith at all. I believe that we will fall and that we need to have a repentant heart, and that God will ultimately bring us into perfect action through Jesus Christ. Spirit man perfected and soulish man in progress. I believe that we are not to live in guilt and shame when we fall, but we repent and get up and move closer to Jesus. I believe that if our nation will repent and turn from wickedness, that God will heal our land. I believe that as a Christian, I must occupy till He comes, and that to call evil wicked and to warn about those evil acts is a part of the mandate of Christianity. That to love also means to be willing to take the risk necessary to confront a friend with the truth in hopes that their heart will be turned because their life matters, even if it means, in that moment, they will possibly hate me. It means that I must risk scorn to stand for truth, and that I can never sit silently by while evil attempts to conquer the world. God is my everything, and Jesus is the love of my life. That does not make me weak, but strong, not silent, but bold, and not fearful, but courageous. Therefore, if you're my friend, while we may not fully agree, know that I share what I share because I care. If you strongly disagree with these beliefs, they are not debatable for me, and you can, if you choose, unfriend me. I do not say this in anger, but in love. I wish for you eyes to see and ears to hear that Jesus Christ is the only way to salvation, and that God, not man, gets to decide what is truth, life, and the way. God bless you.
Wonderful opportunity that we have put the borewell here in this community, and with the
prayer and support of Brad and Pastor Dick Young and Chosen Generation Radio Ministry that has sponsored this borewell. We are so thankful for all our brothers and sisters, those who are praying for us. And we are thankful to Brad who completely helped this borewell to put in this community. God bless you, Brad, and God bless you, Pastor Dick Young, and God bless all the Chosen Generation Ministry. Thank you. God bless you.
Greetings, Chosen Generation Army. I'm so grateful to be connected with you, my listeners. You are some of the most engaged, responsive, loving, and caring people I know. I need to bring to your attention an urgent need for our ministries in India. While there has become a focus on the Uyghurs in China, our ministries in Jammu, Kashmir, and Punjab are being terrorized by those same Uyghurs, the Taliban, and the mounting CCP army at the border of India. Between these threats and the lockdowns, we find ourselves in need of additional financial support. I'm asking for your help to support these pastors and their families, our orphans, our widows, our Bible students, and our community outreaches. $15 will feed a pastor's family for a month. $20 funds our sewing school instructor, and $150 a week funds our base operations, the orphans, the Bible school students, even the sewing school, and our senior indigenous Pastor Samuel. So please go to paypal.me/Pastor Greg. That's paypal.me/Pastor Greg. Or you can call me at 209-380-8654, 209-380-8654, to make your donation over the phone. Please call us, contact me today, and make your best donation. Thank you, and God bless you.
I thank and praise God for this borewell that God has enabled us to put in this village with the prayer and support of Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Radio Ministry. And by the prayer and support of the Pastor Greg Young and the Chosen Generation Ministry, we could put the borewell in this village for the community. Before, this community was drinking dirty water, and that was really causing a lot of sickness. But now they are getting pure and fresh water, and all the community is so thankful for Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Ministry and all the supporters. And we pray for all of you that God would bless you and God would use you so that we can put more and more borewells in a poor and a needy community, those who are really having a problem of the waters. God bless you and keep us in your prayer. And this pastor is, Pastor Jackie has been doing the ministry here in this village. And really this village is a really in a big need of a church building. Keep us in prayer. God bless you. And this is this borewell we have put, and pure and fresh water is coming, and we are so thankful.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. And I have Perry Johnson on the line. Perry is running for president 2024 in the Republican Party. Perry, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Well, I'm delighted to be here.
So, I was looking at your site earlier, and you are out of Michigan, and it talks about what you've done with the American auto industry there in Michigan. Talk to us about what you've done there, brother.
Well, I guess it's hard to ever vote for anyone without knowing something about them.
Sure.
And I grew up in a middle-class family in Dalton, Illinois. My dad was actually a pilot in World War II. My mom was a nurse in the Army WAC. They met at a New Year's Eve party, which was the biggest break of my life. And then I got involved very early in the fact that we have this great country, and my parents told me that in America, anything is possible. We didn't have a lot of money growing up, but I did have a great childhood. In grad school, I worked in the steel. I worked there, getting eviction notices on pretty much a regular basis. My parents didn't have the money to send me to college, but I worked through this in the steel mill undergrad work in undergraduate school, and in graduate school, I eventually got out. My background was mathematics, and I got a job in the auto industry, and this was in the 80s when the auto industry was really struggling. Japan had come in with tremendous quality. They were actually killing us because they had better quality and they had lower prices. And back then in the auto industry, they used to have teams of people at the end of the line checking the product. And if it wasn't any good, they would either rework it or throw it out. And I knew that wasn't going to work. But I thought I knew how to solve the problem. And I left BorgWarner and I started my first company. And I introduced statistical methods in the auto industry, and we started measuring variation. I thought if we started in the beginning of the process and we monitored the variation in the product, we could reduce variation and eventually we would have better product. Well, I actually taught the people on the line how to do this with control charts. We just used the moving average. And they actually made the control charts themselves. And little by little, they used their expertise and their knowledge of the operation with that very simple concept. And in 4 or 5 years, we had the best quality in the world. And I said to myself, well, why not quality as a way of life? And I wrote a book on ISO 9000, the quality standard. And it took off like hotcakes. And now Perry Johnson Registrars and Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation do business in 61 countries around the world. And I spent my entire life bringing quality and efficiency to companies, and now I want to bring quality and efficiency to the federal government. And I'm going to ask you, do you really think the government has quality and efficiency today?
Well, I don't know, and it also is not operating as a constitutional republic.
No, as a matter of fact, we have huge problems with the government. They just become bigger and bigger. They want to have more influence in our lives. They want to tell us what to do,
yep,
how to do it. And I actually want to shrink the government. I say less government, generally better government. And I would like to have a system where instead of them spending every penny in their budget every year, we do just the opposite. We cut 2 cents out of every dollar of discretionary spending, and we incentivize them to spend less. Right now, they spend every penny they get every year so they can get more money the next year and have more power. And the more money they have, the more powerful their agency. Well, this is idiotic. And that is the reason that we are literally $33 trillion in debt. In fact, the number is so staggering that people can't even relate to it, but I'm going to put it in perspective. Every family in America this last year had $610 per month just on the interest on the debt.
Yeah.
And that is nuts. We
only
collected 4.9. Think about it. You collect 3.9 trillion in taxes, and you end up in a position where you are over 800% more than that in debt. And what do? We don't try to reduce that debt. We don't try to balance the budget. No, we increase it even more. And right now, we're borrowing money for between 4.1 and 5.5%. Well, when we were borrowing at a 0.68 of 1%, the interest was, what, $55 billion for rounding here.
Mm-hmm.
But if you borrow it at 4.5%, it's 40% of what we collect in debt. And right now, for the first time in history, we have spent more money on interest than we have on national defense. And this is just not acceptable. Why do we have inflation right now? Because of the government. The government decided to throw $4.5 trillion out there without supplying any goods and services. Of course, everybody has to pay for it. You have to pay for it. Everybody around here has to pay for it.
Right.
And reality is that they're now talking about cutting Social Security by, what, $17,000 to $23,000 per couple? They're talking about cutting Medicare because they can't afford it. Well, government is spending too much money, and they're spending your money, and they do it carelessly. And they don't really care. When Oliver wrote that song about how people are hurting, they are hurting.
Sure. Now, Perry, let me just stop you for a minute. So I hear what you're saying. The other problem, though, is the organization in government that holds the purse strings is the legislature. It's Congress. So how do you, as president, intend to be able to rein in Congress's continued spending?
Well, the bottom line is that unless you get people supporting your plan, you're not going to rein it in. So unless I can get this message across, we're not going to do anything. Now, what I do think is that if you're going to endorse someone running for Senate or running for House, they have to be someone that's going to go along with that 2-cent plan. Because if they don't, then you still are struggling. We have two problems, though. You have a problem first in Congress, because Congress ends up allocating all this money. And understand how they allocate it. Let's say I want a ping pong table, and I want a ping pong table for my state. Well, in order for me to do that, I have to give the guy over there in one state, maybe I have to give him a car. The other person, I have to give some kind of a bowling alley. Another person over there, I have to go and give him a membership in the country club. And so you end up having to give all these other things away to get this ping pong table. So this ping pong table that was $40 ends up costing $40,000 because you're making all these concessions in order to get that ping pong table.
Yep.
What a ridiculous way to run. I mean, it's absurd.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, one of the challenges, and I'm sure you have analyzed this, but one of the challenges that President Trump faced as our 45th president was, and I've talked with Peter Navarro about this and Mark Meadows and several others, one of the challenges that he faced was the problem that as a business person coming in, he knew this was a hostile takeover. I'm sure you've experienced those kinds of things. And his assumption was that the bad guys would leave that weren't going to follow the program. And he extended an olive branch to those thinking that he was going to get people around him that were going to carry water the way that he wanted water carried. I've got a friend of mine that went into Rex Tillerson's State Department as a Trump appointee. He was told in a meeting by a department head, any instructions we receive from the White House are to be ignored. And when they found out that he was a Trump appointee, they had him removed. And the person that helped to remove him was the quote-unquote White House Trump liaison that put him there. So my question to you then is how would you, let's say that you are elected president of the United States. So, Mr. President, my question to you is how are you going to ensure that the department heads, the people that are sitting around your cabinet table, actually do what you want them to do, and that the people working under them will actually take your direction?
Well, in fairness, you know that I thought Trump was a good president in so many ways, and I supported them.
No, I'm not speaking against President Trump in any way, shape, or form in that sense. He has come to realize monstrosity and why Joe Biden in 100 days literally destroyed every good thing that President Trump did.
Yeah, but if you ask President Trump mistakes that he made, I think he would agree that one mistake was in choosing his cabinet. He chose people that were brilliant and very successful, thinking that that was the answer. But just like in a company, I can have somebody who's brilliant and done a great job and has all sorts of talent, but if he doesn't support my program, I can't have him on the cabinet. And that was the mistake he made in that area. He knew that afterwards when he had to get rid of these people, because he suddenly realized it doesn't matter how sharp they are. If they don't agree with me and they don't see the same way I do, they can't be on my cabinet.
There you go. Yeah, no doubt. So I guess the question is, yeah, I mean, because, you know, one of the things that we talk about here that I've talked to people about is, you know, everybody talks about term limits. The problem is not the guy's name that's listed on the door. The problem is the staff that he inherits. If you don't clean out the staff, because the guy who...
On the cabinet, though, you do get to pick your cabinet.
Agreed.
That you agreed.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And the other thing you can do is the people that are underneath you, that is all the people, the civilians that are there year after year, president after president, we have to change the way we reward them. And in my book, I talk about that. You see, in the government right now, they really go out of their way. Their year ends in September. They have a September year end. And they have to make sure that every single dollar is spent at the end of September. And they do that in order to get more money the next year. Well, I say we change that. That we can change. In fact, we give a bonus to people as long as they cut 2 cents out of every dollar of discretionary spending. We have to change the way they're thinking. Instead of making sure every penny is spent, regardless, let's get them focused on trying to be more efficient, trying to save money, give us better quality and efficiency. And if they achieve that goal, they get a bonus. So now they're starting to think about becoming more efficient, delivering a better quality product and service. Now, right now, they're not doing that.
Well,
they want to make sure they have power.
And I would suggest that the largest employer, you know, that we have had, both under the Obama administration and under the Biden administration, is the government. They're the only thing that's keeping the economy going. They talk about economic recovery. There's no private sector recovery. This is all happening predicated on government and maybe some government contracts.
Well, let's take a look at government contracts. This is, in the real world, it's much different, even with the government contractors. So let's say, for hypothetically, that you're a government contractor and you're dealing with the private sector. Well, if you're in manufacturing and you're producing something, and let's say that part is $10. After you start producing it, you get more efficient. They actually expect price reductions. So like if you're in the auto industry or you're in the aerospace industry and you're dealing the same companies the government's dealing with, that price is going down every year because they expect, that is, the companies know you learn how to do it, you become more efficient doing it, and therefore the prices end up coming down. Not with the government. With the government, it's just the opposite.
Right.
Every year, the price keeps going up.
Yep.
Now, the government can operate under the same parameters as private industry, particularly when they're dealing with the same companies under the same auspices. But unfortunately, with the government, it's not working that way. The government is about as inefficient as you can possibly be because of the fact that they don't have that same issue where there's competition and we're trying to put downward pressure on price and upward pressure on quality. And that is really hurting us. And that has to be changed.
Well, don't we really want to just get government out of, you know, trying to be, because that really, what you're talking about is a government that's competing. I mean, that's kind of what you have with the CCP and Russia and Venezuela and Brazil and places like that, where the government is part
making products.
Right.
The government privatized as much as possible.
Sure.
With the possible exception of prisons, I mean, the government is about as inefficient as you can get. Let's take the post office.
Oh, my gosh.
Why can't we not? They lose money every year. Why can't we privatize that? Why can't we privatize as much as possible so we have a downward pressure on price and upward pressure on quality? Yeah. Why don't we get the government out of our lives? Why should the government be telling us what to do, how to raise our kids, what to teach our kids?
Here, here.
I mean, this is not the U.S. government. This is what China does. This is what Russia does. This is not what the United States should do.
Which really leads into, by the way, as we're getting towards the end of our time together, and I appreciate you being with me today, what you've done when it comes to securing the rights of individuals to peacefully assemble and address a broken election system.
Well, what happened there is not right. I mean, I live in Michigan, and in Michigan, we have 16 people in Michigan that basically aren't sleeping at night.
Yeah.
These are just ordinary people. These aren't activists. These
right.
are people that were out there. They thought what they were doing was fine. They had the President of the United States asking them to do something. The attorney said this is something that is going to be required by the Constitution.
Yep.
If it goes to court and the courts say there was something wrong with our election, we're going to need a different group of electors.
Yep.
And all they did was sign on to that. And now we have people who live on Social Security, literally living on Social Security, in a position where they have to try to get an attorney, and it's going to cost them the neighborhoods of $150,000. Well, they can't afford it, and they're not sleeping at night. The one lady, she's like 78 years old, and she has no possibility of being able to afford this attorney. And she does not sleep at night. She's so upset. We have people that have lost their job because of the situation. It's just not right. And I say, in America, everybody has a right to defend themselves.
Yeah. Well, and they should have a right to defend themselves. And what they're doing to those individuals who were following the Constitution and were following the law, it is not unlawful for them to seat alternate electors in an instance where you have concerns and even debate that was supposed to have been going on in the Michigan House relative to the election process and concerns that were raised with regards to it, which we now know are absolutely legitimate.
Actually, the assistant prosecutor wrote a letter to Dana Nessel, who's our attorney general, and said, you have no basis on which to file criminal charges against these people. And she went ahead and did it anyway. She did that to make a name for herself. Maybe she's planning to run for governor or something like that. I don't know. But what she did is just egregious. And even the prosecutor here agreed that there was no basis for a criminal charge. But nevertheless, these people are in a position where they have to try to defend themselves.
And you have created a PAC that people can donate to, and you yourself have put up an initial $1 million investment. Is that correct?
Yes, I have $1 million match for all the donations that come in.
And where do people go to?
Bottom line on defendthem.net.
Defendthem.net.
Yep.
Here we go. Defendthem.
Defendthem.net.
Got it. Go ahead. Go ahead and finish. We got about a minute left.
But in this country, we have to realize that we have the greatest country the world has ever known.
Amen.
And in America, anything is possible. We have the most upwardly mobile society in the history of all humanity. And once America is gone, there is no other America. So we have to keep America the greatest country the world's ever known. And we can only do that by getting the people to band together and say enough is enough. Because what's been going on in the last couple of years is just not tolerable. And in terms of the spending, which has been my theme, because I'm concerned about the inflation, I can't stand the fact that we have middle America hurting so much. It's very bothersome when we have this great country. And we have to keep in mind that the government has just grown so much. And it's spending has gone out of control since the year 2000. It's not just the Democrats. I can't just blame the Democrats. The Republicans have spent a lot of money, too. We started in the year 2000, right? So realize that in the year 2000, we were $5.6 trillion in debt, okay? And it was our gross domestic product was over $10 trillion. It was 56% of gross domestic product. And we actually did have a balanced budget in 99. So now, 23 years later, we are $33 trillion in debt. And we're only collecting, what, $4 trillion in taxes? So, I mean, this is like nuts. So we have a situation where we've got so out of control, we have to keep the United States as the world currency. The U.S. dollar has to be the world currency. If we lose that status, everybody's entire standard of living will drop 20% overnight.
Yeah.
Without anything happening.
Yeah.
So we can't let this happen.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, Mr. Johnson, I thank you for being with us today. PerryJohnson.com is the website. You can get all that information. PerryJohnson.com and again, defendthem.com if you'd like to help, and Perry will be matching up to $1 million in helping to defend, in particular, these 16 individuals that have been targeted in Michigan by a rogue DA that has decided she wants to try to make a name for herself. Perry, thanks for being with us today. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, and thank you, and enjoy life.
All right. God bless you, sir. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. Don Jans joins us on the other side. We'll talk how Marxism has been just indoctrinating, and the indoctrination that's happening in our school. And again, it's so critically important to understand what they're doing in controlling the minds of our children. We'll be back with all that right after this brief break.